Hello and welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. Today, we're talking about a radical new alternative to the paywall. Just 9% of Britons pay for the news, according to the last Reuters Institute digital news report. One of the main reasons for this is that people are so used to getting their news for free. So what would happen if we flip this dynamic upside down? Introducing the paywall, the pitch from a new journalism cooperative publication called Machine, which will share its revenue with a select proportion of its readers. Now I hear you say, monetizing journalism is hard enough these days without letting readers eat the profits. So where is the money coming from? Founder Jasper Hamill tells us today about his plans to drive revenue through brand deals and wider ghostwriting services, which will fund the core journalism. There's more on that coming up, so don't go anywhere. Jasper, welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast. Thanks for coming on. Great to chat.
Delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
I knew we had a problem here in the UK with regards to getting people to pay for news, but I didn't realise things were quite so bad that we needed to pay news consumers to read the news, which is very much the premise of your new endeavour at Machine. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your vision there, Jasper?
Well, I'm concerned that people are paying less attention to journalism. They're kind of overwhelmed by a very noisy environment of social media, and I'm concerned about loyalty, which is essentially non-existent in the digital sphere. We did some tests when I was at the Nationals. When people come in through an aggregator like Google News or Apple News or what have you, they actually don't even know what they're clicking on. They don't know what website they're clicking on. It just completely eludes their attention. So I was trying to think of an idea. How do you reward loyalty whilst cutting through the noise? My conclusion is that you need to build a relationship with your readers. You need to build a community with your readers. And I was very inspired by a British data pioneer called St. John Deakins. That's spelled St. John Deakins. And he basically came up with a company called Citizen Me. And what Citizen Me did is it allowed ordinary consumers to take charge of selling their data to brands. No, I'm not going to be selling data or anything like that, but the model inspired me. And so you could opt to sell your data for about, you know, you probably get £8 or £9 a month, roughly the price of a Spotify membership. And then you would say, oh, I'd like to hear from Jaguar, say, if you're a Jaguar buyer, you know, they're in the news at the moment. Or if you wanted to hear from Sainsbury's, and you would voluntarily sell your data. And that got me thinking, what would be the best way to build a community with readers? And I thought, well, why not share the revenue with them? I don't imagine it'll be a lot of money. Journalism, there's not a lot of money in journalism. But even if it's refunding the cost of a paywall, I am going to charge people to read Machine eventually, although the content will never be locked behind a paywall because I loathe paywalls. But why not share the revenue with them through this mechanism I'm calling the paywall? I'm a former tabloid journalist. My life is defined by bad puns.
I mean, at this point, I've got a million questions. Just to pick up on the brand loyalty thing just for a moment, because I think this is really interesting. The research on this does show that younger audiences are less brand loyal to traditional news outlets. Probably not a coincidence that they're also the most heavy digital and social media users. There's a correlation probably between the two. So I think there is this loyalty question here up for grabs, and your premise by the sounds of things is, what's the incentive for them to engage with a brand if it's not going to be the traditional, you know, legacy behind it? Have I got that right?
That's absolutely correct, yeah. I wonder why you would engage with one brand over another, you know, especially in the age of journalism, and goodness knows I've done journalism in my time. You know, the products are all very similar. And of the digital national, certainly in the tabloid space, they're all very similar. They're often run by the same people. Everyone kind of comes through the mail online and then they spread out through the industry. Excellent journalists, not criticising them, but, you know, very similar outlook. So it's difficult to see what the differentiators are between those publications. And I think loyalty is a major problem. So I think at Reach, they talk about the attention recession, and it's a real problem. There's too much going on, and you don't know where to click. So they're trying these models. They're saying, you know, do you want to pay to remove adverts? Do you just want to put up with the adverts? Whereas I think, well, adverts aren't actually much of a money spinner, really. So I had to try to think of ways that would generate revenue, and paywalls do, but I can't stand paywalls. I think paywalls are creating a two-tier information ecosystem. You know, you've got the people who are rich enough to have a subscription to the FT and The Economist, and they're gaining a significant advantage over people who aren't rich enough to get those subscriptions. And I think a two-tier information ecosystem is kind of antithetical to a civilized society, frankly. And this is my tiny little contribution. And it is a tiny little contribution. It's an indie publication. I'm one man at the moment. I'm hoping to get some allies as I go along the way. But this is my small contribution to kind of addressing that situation.
Is your aversion towards paywalls just about the accessibility inequality, or is it about the friction it creates with readers? I mean, the research on why people don't pay for news, and it's something huge, like 69% of people here in the UK say they wouldn't pay anything for the news. There's a couple of reasons for that. It's hard to charge for something that's just been historically free for so long. But there's also, you know, lack of trust towards the media, for instance. What's the one that you really, you know, press down on and say, look, the paywall could address that pain point?
It is actually primarily the two-tier information ecosystem. I also blame the BBC, to be honest, for giving us the expectation that everything should be free. I mean, how on earth are you supposed to compete with a state-sponsored, state-supported broadcast of that quality? How it was always a difficult task. And
well, there is a licence fee, of course.
Yeah, it is a great business model, isn't it? Pay us or you're getting chucked in jail. I mean, you don't really get a much better business model than that, do you?
But just Jesper, it's very hard to reverse engineer a relationship that is so predicated on this expectation of content being free. I mean, how you engineer that, I don't know. But your answer to this question is, let's give them a financial incentive to consume the news, right? Can you elaborate on that for a moment?
The financial incentive, I think, at its core is about ownership. That's the basic premise of a cooperative model. So if you're a member of the co-op supermarket, it shares its profits with members. And by giving people a small financial incentive, I think you're giving them an ownership and a stake in the future of the publication, and hopefully a say. You know, I don't want to be the all-powerful editor. That's not, I don't like all-powerful editors. I want to have people involved and feel that this is their website. And I just think if there's a tiny little bit of money coming in, and as we go on, what I'd really like to do is, and whether this is possible or not, I don't know, it's an experiment, you know, reward engagement. So more engagement equals a larger share of revenue, if that's possible, if it's legal. We'll see. It's an experiment. But primarily it's about that. It's giving people a stake, giving people a reason to come back, and giving people a reason to care about the success of a publication. I read The Mail, The Mirror, The Times, The Guardian. I'm not really that bothered about their success because it's not my community. I just read them. But if, say, you could have even a small, say, 500 readers that came back every day and knew that the success of your website would lead to a small but, you know, not totally insubstantial reward, I think that would help them play a part in its future. Maybe they'd be more likely to comment, to engage, to share. It's about building community and just giving ownership, primarily.
Run the example for me for a moment, Jesper. I'm a daily user. I'm logging into maybe your website every single day. How might that play out as an incentive structure for me?
So you'd log in, and we could tell you're logged in, and probably I'd like to monitor as little as possible. Obviously, there'll be sort of KYC requirements, know your customer requirements, and so I imagine we'll use PayPal to make the payments to kind of bypass them. So KYC has already been dealt with. I just imagine at first people log in, they read, and then at the end of the month, if they've paid, we share the profits with them. Ideally, I'd like to pay them back their membership fee. I think that would be a small, modest task. We're not only going to make money from advertising. In fact, we may not make much money from advertising. We're primarily going to make money by selling services. So I do copywriting and PR on the side, and we'll bring people in to help with that. And the revenue from that will be shared with the readers. So, and that's kind of a strange and slightly Judas-like way to do things.
Yeah, I'm wondering how those two dots line up for a moment, Jesper. How does the copywriting fit into the business model of Machine?
Well, to fund Machine.
To feed the machine.
To feed the machine. Well, yes, it makes me think of that show Big Bertha. I don't know if you ever saw that from the 80s. Anyway, you don't want your journalism to be entirely decided by the people who pay you, which is advertisers. So I think, again, the way to stay neutral and the way to stay free is to have some other form of income. And selling services, copywriting, PR primarily, marketing services, through a different wing of the business is how we're going to do that. And I know that is the sort of a controversial going to the dark side kind of idea, but journalism and PR, they are these kind of sisters in some way. And I think that when journalists do go to the dark side, they're extremely valued. So I imagine what will be is an agency disguised as a publication.
So, Machine will, on one hand, produce rigorous tech journalism, like a recent piece looking at a Microsoft dataset used to train its AI models, which contained biased material against Elon Musk, of course, a tech rival to Microsoft owner Bill Gates. On the other hand, Machine will offer very separate commercial services, like ghostwriting on behalf of brands, which could range from writing a book all the way through to running their newsletter or LinkedIn account. And there's a tricky middle ground with potential sponsored content, and that'll just have to be overcome through transparency. A select number of superfans could potentially earn around £10 a month or so from habitual visits to the website and consistent levels of engagement, but this will work on an application basis rather than a free-for-all. As someone who has spent the last 16 years working in journalism before becoming a PR consultant in 2020, Jasper knows both worlds well and says the two have long been tied at the hip. It just so happens there is more money to be made in PR, hence why so many journalists make the swap, but this is also an opportunity for news organisations if they are careful.
I'm not a billionaire and I'm not a millionaire, but yes, it does pay much better than journalism. If you're going great guns, you can earn probably three times as much without a great deal of difficulty. And I would say this to actually, particularly to freelance journalists, that, you know, there's no shame in writing for brands. It's basically the same job, and you are good at it. If you've been a reporter for a long, long time, or an editor, or both, you write like a demon. Those skills are really, really rare. Journalists have really, really rare skills, and we are the best commercial writers, I think. I've met a lot of copywriters now, and no offence to copywriters, in the kind of PR space particularly, I think journalists are the best writers.
It's really fascinating what you've essentially said there, which is PR is essentially smuggled into the news anyway in the form of earned media. We might as well commoditize and earn from it in a reasonable capacity.
Yes, I think so. There must be a strong firewall between the two, I think, because PR stories, are they ever going to be as good as something that a reporter has gone on and dug up themselves through contact sources, FOIs, various skullduggery? Absolutely not. It's very unusual that we'll get a great story from a PR. But what we can do is we can just produce content. It's kind of shifting now in the world of PR. You see a lot of people sort of running LinkedIn feeds for their customers. Running LinkedIn feed for someone at its best is not that different from running a news publication. In fact, it shouldn't be, but you could. It's a great way for, I don't mean to sound too giving people the hard sell here, but it's a great way for brands and individuals to make friends with their customers. You know, if you're giving people news is a brilliant way of making contacts. It's a great way of meeting people. And that's increasingly a big area of business, is running people's LinkedIn feeds, writing their sort of thought leadership for them.
As a tech-focused publication, it's easy to see a world where you are featuring more companies, particularly in this like generative AI boom, and there's all sorts of gadgets and gizmos in which to start, you know, monetizing content. I suppose the critical question there is, will audiences really care about that? You know, especially in this attention recession that you were talking about earlier on, when, you know, there's so much information out there, we're all feeling overwhelmed and overloaded by it. You know, will audiences really care? Will they buy into this, you think?
Yes. Will they buy into, you know, product announcements? Possibly that's not the sort of stuff that tends to get engagement on the internet. I, to be honest, have always treated tech journalism like gossip journalism. My mantra was always cover the community, not the news. And I know that sounds strange. Around the launch of an iPhone or another gadget will be a community of rabid fans, and they will talk about something in relation to that thing that they're obsessed with coming out. And actually, there will be one or two publications will get the juice. So, you know, one of the really big tech publications or the New York Times or whatever will get all the juice. New iPhone released, they'll go mega viral, they'll get 2 million views, whatever, 10 million views. But actually, behind the scenes, in the sort of dark regions of the internet, there are people talking about this release, and something's always gone wrong. Something's always annoying them. They're arguing about something, whatever it is. And if you narrate their concerns, it's actually just like a community story. It's like a local newspaper journalism. And I've had great success in that. And there's a million communities. Like the crypto community is great. The crypto community has some really interesting and really strange people in it.
Those two ideas seem at odds to me slightly, Jasper, because you've got a community of people who are going to want their, you know, their interests served, but you've also got quite highly monetizable and commercialized content. The two feel slightly at odds to me. So I just wonder, if you lean too far into the commoditized content, do you potentially face the wrath of your community? Will they start raging against the machine?
That's a good question. Absolutely. There's a very strong risk you would do that. This, I think, is the magic of selling services. Because if you're selling a service, if you think of your publication as a shopfront, you've got journalists and they are brilliant at writing content. So if you were a brand and you wanted someone to write your content, you'd come and ask us. Ideally, I would like the two not to meet. We will sell sponsored content and it will be clearly labelled sponsored content. But no, I think selling services kind of is a firewall between that. So you are doing the commercial work, and so you could do it. For instance, I've worked with publications to do this. I worked a publication called The Stack, brilliant tech journalism, absolutely independent and fiercely independent and highly critical of all the kind of big giants of the tech industry. But they shoot videos and sell them to tech firms. So someone like, I think, really obscure companies, but with a lot of money. It's enterprise technology. So they make technology for the biggest corporations. And The Stack is a brilliant... Ed Target, founder of The Stack, is a really charismatic, clever bloke. And he hosts these videos, which are beautifully shot. And people pay for them. And it's a superb service. And not only is it just made by a video firm, they've got a kind of a journalist in them. But they're not hosted on The Stack site. Not always, anyway. So there's a studio behind the scenes, a commercial studio, which the website is advertising. But yeah, there's always a risk that you're going to annoy some of those people. But, you know, that's life.
Question. Is there a chance that you could be a victim of your own success, in that the more that you grow, the more of your revenue your audience will eat up if you're feeding it back to them?
Yeah, at the moment, I guess I'm more worried about being a victim of my own failure.
Yeah, but I mean, you might run into a scaling problem there, where the more successful you are, the more you have to give away, and then potentially reach diminishing returns.
Absolutely. That is something that's crossed my mind. And the solution to that is we're going to have to stagger the amount of memberships that come on board. It's not going to just be a free-for-all, anyone can apply.
Right.
So I'm reaching there's a couple of milestones we're working towards, and they're rather prosaic milestones. Like, we need 500 subscribers on the website. We use this brilliant open source blogging platform called Ghost, and basically that's the next tier of membership. You can have 500 subscribers and then you can extend and send them a newsletter and all the rest of it. So that's a rather prosaic milestone, but that's when we'll invite the first people on board, and it will be a small number of people.
Right.
And I imagine it will be a small number of people going forward, depending on demand. It could be that, you know, three people apply and that's your lot, and then another three people apply a month later, you know. There isn't, you don't have to turn people away at the door, but it will definitely be selected. And there is obviously a risk, but I think I always want to earmark, and this will be decided with the community, decided with the people that join, say 10%. That's basically the figure I have in my head. 10% of the profits or larger are going back to the community, or however we decide to use it. Yeah, but there is a definite risk, and that has crossed my mind. So staggering the membership seems to me to be the logical response to that.
But as you've alluded to, this is an experiment as far as you're concerned. You've been quite open about that fact, and indeed there are options for you to go in a slightly different direction in terms of the incentive structure, for instance. What are some of the backups in case this doesn't work?
Well, I guess my backup plan is always to go full-time to the dark side, to put on the cloak of PR, and it's the experiment, and I'm talking to people and seeing how it could evolve. For instance, I talked to St. John Deakins the other day, And he suggested, you know, rather than giving people the money back, you might pool the resources. You know, you might say, like, I'm sharing 20% or 10% of the revenue of the profits, and you pool it. And then as a community, you decide to do something charitable with it. And then you write about it, which would be content. So these are not set in stone. It's an experiment. And I hopefully want to build a community around tech science journalism of Machine, a small community, and help them make decisions. And if other people copy that idea, all the better. That would be wonderful to sort of take part in a conversation about the future of journalism.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, wishing you all the best with it. I hope that you don't have to go back to the dark arts of PR and that you can stick this out for a while and just give this a fair crack of the whip. You know, it'd be great to see what the uptake is on this, and you can be sure that I'll be keeping an eye on it. Thanks so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed our chat.
Thanks very much for having me. Brilliant to speak to you.
The takeaway for today is this. The Peggy Wall is an experiment to see if financial incentives are enough to build an engaged community. We have seen success from cooperative models like the Ferret and the Bristol Cable here in the UK, which appeal because members feel like they have a say in the direction of the business. Machine is treading on similar lines, but its appeal is a bit more commercialised, and its allegiance to the PR world could prove a snag. It's a high-risk, high-reward strategy that I'll be keeping an eye on, and I'd love to know what you think about this model. Let me know. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, /X at JBGJournalism, or email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all of your usual podcast platforms, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.